Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you on this rather blustery day. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, back from her adventure. And I hope we get to find out a little bit about where you've been the last couple of weeks.
Hiding.
Yes. No, hopefully not hiding. No hiding allowed. But welcome back. You were on another continent.
Yes, I was. It's good to be back, though. I will say I landed on this planet and I said, okay.
Yes.
On the continent, Northern Hemisphere, happy to be back.
Good.
Yes. Good to be back.
Okay, wonderful.
I hope everybody missed me a lot.
We did.
Oh,
desperate.
Desperate.
That's right. Totally missed you.
In the past, whenever I used to go away, I used to tell the team, try not to miss me. And now I've decided that that's not the right thing to say. The right thing to say is, I hope you miss me a lot.
Yes, and we did. You were gone for like, what, 3-4 months?
Oh, gosh,
oh, it just seemed like forever.
Not that long.
Okay, just a couple weeks, but
yeah.
Very good. And Dr. Mixon back in the saddle. We have our two doctors here and ready to take your questions, talk about your health. And we had a few folks that couldn't get through last week or had quick interactions. Feel free to please call us back today and we can talk more about that. Here is our phone number, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770 to get into the call queue. All right, Dr. Mixon, do you have a medical update for us or some stories making news or rumors, health rumors going around that
lots
we need to kibosh?
Lots of health rumors going around, but I'm going to stay away from them because if I say it, somebody will say, well, Dr. Mixon
what?
Said.
That's yes. right. They will indeed.
That's right.
And I will hear it first.
So, no, we aren't going to address the rumors. We just let them rooming their way through the world.
Okay.
No, actually, there's a couple of interesting things going on right now. One, of course, is this is Breast Cancer Month.
Yes, Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
And so we really ought to spend a little time today talking about breast cancer.
We should.
Okay.
Yep.
And
what else is going on this month? It's really
Halloween.
Halloween.
And football.
Okay, yeah.
And rain.
All Hallows Eve, yes.
That's right. Yeah, you have a costume picked out?
Do you have any Wiccan friends that will be doing bonfire at midnight?
No.
But do you have costumes picked out? Or does your daughter, Ivory, like to do the costume thing?
Yes, she does. But, you know, it's sad. This Halloween, on the 31st, I am flying to a rehab meeting.
Oh, you are.
Oh, Dr. Okay. Mixon, you're
down
in rehab?
In Dallas.
Wait a minute.
Don't start rumors, Lynette.
No.
This is not drug rehab. This is people with injuries.
Yeah,
oh,
this
wow.
is physical so, medicine and rehab,
yes,
the training that I did.
Right. This
okay.
is physical, this is people that have had brain injuries, are trying to help them from, you know,
strokes, cardiovascular disease, amputations.
Right, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a hardcore medicine meeting. But wouldn't you know, it starts at 7:30 in the morning on November 1st, which means I have to fly down the evening of October 31st. So I'm going to miss my daughter's Halloween this year because I will be on a plane heading for Dallas.
Okay.
Aww. Oh, well.
Okay. You know, every once in a while, we miss those.
The hazards of being a doctor daddy.
But you can do a pre-Halloween party at home, Jerry. We'll all come.
Oh, all right. Yes. Okay. Actually, have each of you dressed as one of you will be the good fairy and the other wicked witch.
Well,
who gets to be which?
I don't know.
Well, the staff is doing a potluck on Halloween Day, yeah. So we Ooh. Will be. I don't know if they're allowed to dress up or not. I said nothing.
Well, you know,
yes.
I don't mind the staff at Longevity dressing up. I got burned once as a family doctor.
Okay.
The staff talked me into letting them dress up for Halloween, and I said, oh, what the hell, I'll do it too.
Okay.
You know, so my staff showed up, as kitty cats and so on, and I showed up as a clown.
Uh-oh.
I had a, purple, blue, and white vertical striped outfit with a red, with a bright red fright wig and a big red bulbous nose.
Oh, boy. Little face paint, perhaps?
Yes. A little face paint on my cheeks and so on. And in the morning, it was unfortunately a practice day, so I wore to the office. And we got a good kick out of it for most of our patients. But then at lunchtime, I had to go over to the bank.
Oh, no.
And so I went to the bank dressed in my fright wig and et cetera. And with the fright wig, I'm already 6'4", and it made me 2 or 3 inches taller.
Yes.
And,
oh, boy.
And I get to the clerk, and I hand her my check that I'm depositing, and she looked at the name on the check, and she said, are you really Dr. Mixon? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, it makes me a little nervous because I have an appointment with you right after lunch.
This afternoon.
For my first pap smear.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I knew where that was going.
Oh, no.
So this poor young lady was going to have a red, bulbous nose, bright wigged clown doing her first pap smear.
Okay.
Not exactly the sort of thing to instill great confidence.
Not at all.
Wow. Okay. But I hope you stayed in your costume so she knew it was you.
Yes, that's right. Well, yeah. At least the clown was the same one who deposited the check at lunchtime. So,
that's great.
So, yeah, I have been a little leery of dressing in costume on Halloween ever since that date 30 some years ago.
Yeah. No, so, I can understand that. Yes. And you never know what the staff will do. So,
yes.
Yeah, I defer that decision to smarter people than me.
Yeah. So we'll see. I do have a costume that we bought at a Renaissance fair.
Okay.
A few years ago.
Okay.
Nice.
And I was dressed as the king, of course.
Of course.
And, wonderful.
Purple and ermine robes and, nice. Tights and the whole routine.
Yeah.
And a fancy purple hat with feathers.
There you go. So, of course.
Yes. So, I vote that, Dr.
Maybe
Mixon.
Maybe I'll come in as the king of the office on
there
Halloween. We'll see.
There you go.
Okay. That would be good. Maybe a little less scary than the clown.
Yes, right.
Especially if you have to make a deposit. So end of month deposit on the 31st. So.
Anyway. So shall we chat about, well, first of all, do we have any calls waiting?
We do, actually. And Joe from Chehalis would love to talk about our topic today, which is breast cancer.
Okay.
So should we dive in with Joe from Chehalis?
Let's do it.
Okay. Welcome, Joe, to the show. Good morning and congratulations for being our first caller.
Hello, Joe. How can we help?
Good morning. Yes. My sister had breast cancer. And she caught it early, so they took it out and radiated her. But now they want to put her on hormone-blocking pills. And the pill is called Aromazan. And on top of that, she's got bone problems, and they want to put her on Bozomax. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she's wanting to balance her hormones out with longevity. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there are several things that can be done. The aromatase inhibitor that she's using will prevent her from making any estrogen at all.
Correct.
And the problem with that, of course, is it's going to make her osteoporosis, her bone thinning, even
worse.
More severe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Jerry, you know, that is the standard of care.
I realize it is.
And they've expanded that. So instead of giving it now for 3 or 5 years, they're giving it to 5 or 7 years. So
yes.
And
they're letting the ladies break their bones when
the reason is breast cancer recurrence rate is lower if they give it for longer.
I do understand that. Yes. It's just going to depend in part on what is the pathology of her
tumor. What type
of
cancer.
Tumor,
right.
What type of cancer, how invasive.
Right.
And so we want to see her initial studies and her pathology reports. But one thing that is being done by some of the cutting-edge clinics, such as Glacier in Ohio, is to use testosterone with or without an aromatase inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
So let's explain a little bit about breast cancer.
And also the different types of estrogens.
Yes.
Estrogen is not one
compound. Estrogen is a class of compounds.
And Joe, you had a quick question for the doctor before he began?
Sorry.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say that she's been told of recent that the cancer could feed on testosterone also.
But that's the problem we're talking about. Yeah, but it can't feed on testosterone. In fact, testosterone is an anti-breast cancer drug. The concern is that estrogen and testosterone are almost the same molecule.
And yeah, they're in the same pathway too. So testosterone makes estrogen.
Yes, by aromatase.
Yes.
But she's on an aromatase inhibitor.
So they're blocking that conversion.
Precisely. You can't convert the testosterone to estrogen if you're on an aromatase inhibitor. And so what Glacier has done is to give women high doses of testosterone, which actually suppresses and makes the cancer shrink up, in addition to an aromatase inhibitor, so that they can't convert the testosterone into estrogen. And that combination allows you to get rid of virtually all of the adverse effects of having your estrogen suppressed.
Yes.
For instance, the testosterone stimulates new bone growth and allows you to grow newer, denser bones instead of letting your bones get thinner and thinner and thinner by suppressing the estrogen. So
it also helps improve your mood, reduces hot flashes, vaginal dryness. So it helps improve a lot of the symptoms that women experience in postmenopause when the hormone levels decrease.
That's right. And those symptoms go into warp speed when they put them on the aromatase too.
Correct.
Because then, you know, a woman at menopause still has about 50% of her estrogen. And when you put them on the aromatase, they have zip.
Yeah.
And so all of the menopause symptoms just go sky high.
Correct. And some women are more sensitive. And then there are some that will not have any side effects. But then some really do suffer quite a bit.
Yeah.
And physiologically, the drug is doing what it's supposed to do.
Yes. You know, the problem we've got is that breast cancer is no longer healthy breast tissue. Healthy breast tissue thrives on estrogen. But as your estrogen levels drop with aging, the breast tissue becomes starved for estrogen, and it actually undergoes a mutation that allows it to produce its own estrogen. And that's the problem with the cancer. This is no longer healthy breast tissue. This is a mutated tissue that produces its own estrogen and its own growth factors. And so it just grows and grows and grows. The tumor is not dependent on the estrogen in the woman's system.
Mm-hmm.
It's making its own estrogen, and it's making it out of DHEA and pregnenolone and cortisol and everything else. So when we give a woman an estrogen blocker like the aromatase, the goal is not to block all of the estrogen in her system, because that's not the danger. The goal is to try to block the tumor from making its own estrogen. The problem is we don't know how to do that. And so what we end up doing is blocking all of the estrogen in the system.
Right.
But then her brain is starved for estrogen, and so we start getting cognitive decline. and earlier dementia. You start getting cardiovascular disease, heart attacks and strokes start increasing significantly.
Yeah.
Your bones thin out much quicker.
Yeah.
And so the question is not the hot flashes. The question is, how do we prevent your heart and your brain and your bones and the rest of you from going bad because of an estrogen deficiency?
Yeah.
And so what Glaser came up with was the idea of using the testosterone with a blocker so she can't convert the testosterone into estrogen, so that we protect her brain, we protect her heart, we protect her bones, and we don't feed the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
Does that go some way towards answering your concerns?
Well, yeah. I mean, this blocker you talked about that Glaser has, how is that available?
Oh, it's actually, she's on it.
Mm-hmm.
she's just not on the testosterone with it. They've already started her on the aromatase inhibitor. And that was one of the drugs you described. Tell you what, we have to take a break, but we'll be right back after this little commercial break, and then we'll chat about this some more.
All right. Taking a quick break here and then back with more Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give you the phone number so you can get into the call queue. That number is 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770. The topic today of breast cancer since October is breast cancer awareness, or anything else that you would like to talk about with your health. We'll be right back.
Song.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever actually met a Cecilia in my life.
Only one.
Okay.
Only one. She goes by Cece.
You have a wider, richer set of friends than I do.
Just one, though. We're back with Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome back to the show. The phone number to get through, just like Joe did, is 1-800-465-8770. We're talking about breast cancer treatments with Joe and Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat.
Okay, so Joe, basically, it sounds like your doctor was trying to simplify things for you. But in the process of simplification, what?
Can I tell you something real quick?
Sure.
She just got the pills. She's afraid to take the pill, the hormone blocker, because understanding what that will do to her. And
yes.
So she's at a point to where she has to decide quality of life, I suppose. Now, what do you do?
Well, what I would do is get the best of both worlds. I would want to use the aromatase along with the testosterone. Okay, because when your doctor said that the tumor can feed on testosterone, it was a simplification that changed the meaning, because it really can't feed on the testosterone. In fact, testosterone is an anti-breast cancer
drug. Right, but Jerry, we don't know her genetics either, and we don't know much about this.
But that's why we measure it.
But right, so I was just going to suggest that if your sister has not been through a genetic counselor, it's probably wise to do so, because that will give you the risk of a recurrence or what this means for the family. And so that'll give you a better idea of whether she should take the aromatase inhibitor, what dose should she take, for how long should she take it. I do recommend that people use it simply because it will reduce the risk for recurrence.
Absolutely.
You don't want to not take it and then 5 years down the road you have a recurrence, right? That's the last thing anybody wants. Yeah.
But the trick is to get the protection from the aromatase inhibitor
without
getting all the downsides of being hormone starved.
Yes, and in the past I have known that oncologists are okay with the patients using DHE and testosterone. So I think we all give patients a little bit of a break. They start the aromatase inhibitor, and about a year or so later, they don't mind using DHE and testosterone. And as long as we're measuring estrogen levels, they are fine with that. And then also, as Jerry, you started saying that estrogen is a class of hormones.
Yes.
And it's estradiol that carries more risk. Estriol doesn't. And, you know, there are urine estrogen metabolism studies that you can do that will tell you your personal risk. And are you breaking it down into the metabolite that'll increase your risk for developing cancer? And then there are certain supplements like DIM that she can take that'll reduce her risk even further. And then there are toxicogenomic studies that can be done to highlight whether this drug is right for her or not and whether she'll have side effects from it or not.
Okay. No, I'm trying to make it as simple as I can. I guess you've added a whole two layers of complexity. You realize that. you know, the fact is that the aromatase inhibitors are an important thing. So I tell her, yes, I think you're going to need those. The question is, what are we going to do so that you don't get all the downsides that come with the aromatase inhibitor? The upside is it lowers your risk of reoccurrence of the tumor. The downside is her brain, her heart, her bones, her skin, her gut, every other part of her body suffers from having all of her hormones in serious decline. So, you know, we want to get her the protection. We also want to protect her from all those downsides that we possibly can. Does that make sense to you, Joe?
Yes. Well, it does. I'm worried about them wiping out her hormones, and I understand the consequences of all that. So this DNA study is something you guys do.
Well, we don't do them in-house, obviously, but we can draw the blood. But generally, this is done with her oncologist as a consultation.
The genetic counselor will do some of the DNA studies so that you kind of get more information about what type of breast cancer this was. What we do is a urine study where we look at the estrogen metabolites. Okay. And by that, I mean is that estrogen is broken down into different products, and those products can either be harmful for her and increase her risk for breast cancer, or they can not cause any harm for her. So we can study that, and we can help her change the breakdown products by giving her certain nutrients, vitamins, diet, and supplements that'll make it safe for her. So we can measure that. And then the toxicogenomic study, that's an expensive study, but that also will tell us whether she can metabolize the drug that she's getting, and is it safe for her or not? Will it give her side effects or not?
I see. All right. Sounds like you got some more work to do.
Yeah. Well, right. And, you know, again, the genetic counselors are around. There's a lot of them in the area.
Yeah.
And so this is just an extra step that we like to see our people use.
Sure. Do you have anybody you recommend?
Well, all major hospital systems have genetic counselors. So it depends on where she's going. Swedish has their own, Overlake has their own, UW has their own as well. And Fred Hutch certainly has some. So if she's plugged into a big hospital system, they all have genetic counselors.
But she just may need to kind of tweak the doctor's memory to say, hey, I would like to get this done.
Right. And if you are a longevity patient, then we do have a reference at Overlake we can give you, but you'd have to call us.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Good luck
to
your sister. Sorry about her diagnosis and wish her all the best.
Yes. Thank you for that call.
I mean, cancer is tough no matter which way you slice it.
It is. And of course, my big thing is I think we should be protecting women from getting breast cancer. You know, we've now got studies that say that if we start women early enough, we can cut the risk of getting breast cancer dramatically. You know, there's studies by both Donovitz and Glazier that show an 85% reduction in the risk of breast cancer, even if we don't start treating the women until they're in their mid-50s. The average age in those studies when they started on the therapies was 54, and they reduced their risk of breast cancer from 300 cases per 100,000 woman years to 50 cases
and
per 100,000 woman
even
years.
Even the Women's Health Initiative study showed that.
Yes.
That women who are started early on hormone replacement therapy, after they reach menopausal symptoms, their risk for breast cancer is reduced by up to 30%.
But here's the scary part, okay? Breast cancer doesn't spring full blown.
Yeah.
A woman doesn't go along for the first 50 some years of her life with perfectly healthy breasts and then one day develops cancer.
Right.
You know, the cancer is a progression.
Yeah.
They start with a little bit of as the hormones are declining, of some mildly abnormal breast tissue. Mm-hmm. And that mildly abnormal breast tissue over the next years gets worse and worse and worse. And then it goes to a class we call dysplasia. And the dysplasia gets worse and worse. And then finally, probably 10 years after the process started, it becomes a cancer.
Yeah.
And then the cancer starts as one cell. And on average, a woman will have a breast cancer for 5 years before we find it,
mm-hmm.
because it's too small to find.
Yeah.
And so a woman who is now diagnosed with a breast cancer today has probably had that cancer for at least 5 years and has had that process of developing the cancer going on for 15 years.
Right.
If we can start them on appropriate therapies at 40 instead of in their mid-50s, we could probably get rid of 90%+ of all the breast cancer in America.
That's right. And I think herein lies a very important point that you bring up, Jerry, that prevention is the key. Unfortunately, we all wait for a diagnosis before we act upon it.
Yes.
And yet we have enough science and technology and evidence today that if we were to mitigate risks when people are younger, their future can be different.
Yes. There's no reason for waiting for cancer and then treating it.
Yeah.
When we know things that will dramatically reduce your risk of getting a breast cancer. And the earlier you let us start on it, the more effective we can be at keeping you from ever having to be treated for breast cancer.
Yeah.
It frustrates me that we have the knowledge, but for some bizarre quirk of human nature, people don't do prevention.
Yeah.
They wait until they have a symptom. They wait until they're sick. And then they say, well, someone should fix me.
Yeah.
And the problem is you're already sick. Okay. And it's a lot easier to prevent you from getting sick than to treat you after the damage has been done. And one of the examples I use is we all know that you should keep your tires on your car inflated well. Mm-hmm. And when they're inflated, the sidewalls don't flex. But when you let the air leak out, the sidewalls start to flex and rub, okay? And that's wearing out the sidewall. If you wait until that sidewall blows out and now you got a hole in the tire, it's too late to put air in,
mm-hmm.
okay? You've blown a hole in the tire.
Yeah.
By the time you've got the cancer, that's the medical equivalent of having the blowout, okay? We can't prevent it once you've got it.
Right.
What we need to do is keep you from getting it.
Yeah.
And it's as simple in the human body as keeping the air in the tires at the proper rate or putting oil in the car before you burn up the engine.
Right.
Okay? Let us help you before you have your cancers. It's so much safer and so much easier and so much better protection than waiting until you have a cancer and then expecting us to try and fix it.
That's right. And a plug in here for mammography. Please go in for your screenings regularly.
But even that doesn't prevent breast cancer.
It doesn't prevent, Jerry.
It helps
us
find it earlier.
Exactly.
And if we find it earlier, our treatment can be more effective.
Yeah.
But I'd rather prevent it in the first place.
I agree with you 100%.
We're talking about breast cancer. It is October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. If you've got questions, just like Joe, give us a call at 1-800-465-8770 or any other question you may have about your health. We're going to talk about Dr. Mixon's, well, one of his favorite things, resveratrol. Yes, we're going to talk about that next. And I'm going to give you the phone number.
She was talking about my wife.
I know.
One of my favorite things.
That's right. 1-800-465-8770. That number to get through today with your questions, 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. A very good morning to you. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon here and Dr. Samira Umat. We're taking your calls today on the radio show. Don't wait until the very end. We need you to call now so that we can have plenty of time to get to you and get to your question. Here is that number today. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Right now, we are headed to Whidbey Island.
Okay.
And we have Barbara on the line. Good morning, Barbara.
Hello, Barbara.
Morning.
How can we help you today?
Well, I want to first thank you guys because you have been a blessing to me every Saturday morning for about 20 years. And I appreciate your help. I just have a quick question about resveratrol. Recently started taking it, and I'm not sure how much I should take. The bottle says it has 500 milligrams per serving.
And how many pills is a serving?
Two.
Okay, so it's 250 milligrams per capsule.
Per capsule, yeah.
All right, that's kind of a standard dose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it is, uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, resveratrol is a fascinating compound, does a lot of really good stuff for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's protective against heart disease.
Yeah.
It's protective against blood clots. It's protective against strokes. It lowers the risk of several cancers. So, you know, a lot of good reasons to use resveratrol, but an especially good one for midlife women is that it increases blood flow to the brain.
You know, that's my main reason for taking it, because I'm concerned about my brain.
Well, yes, and you know, women by 50 have significant decline in blood flow to their brain. Menopause is coincident with that. It's not the menopause per se that's doing it. Having your period or not isn't what causes blood flow to the brain. But the same sorts of physiologic decline that are resulting in lack of progesterone, so lack of periods, is also affecting the arterial compliance, the ability for the arteries to flex and move, and for the lining of the artery to get smooth and let the blood flow through quickly. There are studies that show that in midlife women, that is women in their 50s, doses as low as 75 milligrams twice a day, that's 150 milligrams a day, had a significant increase in blood flow to the brain. Fascinatingly, it is a dose response curve, so higher doses do an even better job of increasing blood flow. Now, I have not yet seen a study that says, where does that plateau? We know that 150 a day is significant, 250 is better, 300 is better. What we don't know is how high can you go and still continue to get improvement, because at some point you're going to hit an upper limit and it's gonna plateau. It's say, okay, this far, no further. But I have not seen the upper dose response curve. I've only seen it, you know, so far, every time they've raised the dose in the studies, the blood flow to the women's brain is increasing. I think it's also fascinating, they've never done those studies in men. You know, so we know that it helps women's blood flow in their brain. We don't know if it helps men. Now, I take a big dose of it every day because I'm assuming that those things that are helping my wife's blood flow are going to help mine too. And so
well, does age even make a difference on how much you should take?
Well, yeah.
And so,
you know, because we make the stuff, we make a 350 milligram capsule.
Right? We used to make a 200.
We used to have a 200, and now we have a 350 because I was looking at studies saying more turns out to be better.
Yeah.
So one pill a day of ours is 350 milligrams. Two pills a day is 750 milligrams or 700 milligrams. And, of course, I take two in the morning and one in the evening.
Yeah.
So I'm in excess of 1,000 milligrams a day.
Wow.
My wife is taking 700 milligrams a day. She takes one capsule in the morning, one in the evening. Yes. Well, she's in her late 40s. You know, I'm in my late 70s. So
I'm 85 and in almost perfect health. I have no health issues at all.
Wonderful. And
awesome.
So
I just want to keep my brain.
Yes. Well, you know, it's the old adage, if the brain don't work, the rest don't matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, yes. You know, Jerry, they also say that you can get resveratrol from red wine.
Yes.
So it's from the skin of red grapes.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, there's also that option, but how much red wine are you going to drink?
I did the calculation one time, and one of our 350 milligram capsules is equal to something in excess of 900 bottles of red wine.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
so you're a lot better off to take one of our pills and stay plastered on red wine.
Yes. But honestly, I think a glass of red wine is really worth a lot.
All right.
Okay.
Use it to wash down your marinara sauce.
Before I started taking resveratrol, I didn't know about it until I heard about it from you. And then I had been taking vitamin B12 and ginkgo biloba.
Uh-huh.
Now, should I discontinue those and just take the high dose of resveratrol?
The B vitamins are important for brain function,
yes,
too. Okay, there's...
Okay, so it's good to continue that.
It is. And ginkgo biloba is also one of those supplements that has been shown to improve brain function in a fair number of animals.
And they're all working through different mechanisms,
they
right?
Are, yes.
Resveratrol's improving blood flow, and the vitamin Bs improve inflammation. They decrease homocysteine levels.
Yep.
And the ginkgo is probably doing something else. So they're all working through different mechanisms.
And the omega-3s
work
on the neurons themselves. So, yes.
Yeah, you know, that's wonderful because what I've done so far, I do have a good brain. I just because of my age, I'm thinking about what will happen if I become 90 or more. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
This is very helpful to me. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Thank you for the call, Barbara.
Nice to hear those stories.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes, that she's in good health and still
85.
Yes, and still wanting to stay that way and doing what she can. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have a few minutes before our next break. Let me give out that phone number. It's 1-800-465-8770. Phone lines are wide open for you right now at 1-800-465-8770 with your calls about your health. Or if you'd like some questions or have some questions for you or family member concerning breast cancer, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we're talking about that as well. I did have doctors a call from Kim in Seattle, and she left her question. She said her friend is going in for a septoplasty. Is that like a first
nasal septum?
Nasal,
yeah.
Okay, with general anesthesia, and her friend is worried about her. Wants to know what types of anesthesia for this procedure, Dr. Mixon or Dr. Umat would prefer for this experience.
All right. Well, first of all, when you first told us septoplasty, I always leap to the worst possible conclusion. I heard septum, and I thought of I thought of cardiac septum, the division between the left and right ventricles of the heart.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh my God, what?
Yeah, knock her out for
nasal
that.
Nasal septum. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Very different.
Very different, and much more common.
Yes, it is. Well, since your husband does septoplasties,
about the surgery or the anesthesia? Well, for anesthesia,
either one.
Well, again, it depends, right? And I think you want pain control, and this is a quick surgery. And depending upon the patient's age and their other risk factors, you want to talk to the anesthesiologist a little bit. And I would go in for pain relief and a quick surgical treatment and a good outcome. But I know that as patients get older, they worry about the impact of anesthesia and recovery and on cognitive function.
And so, as they should.
And so they worry about, can they get away with a little lower dose anesthesia?
And that's the problem, though. We don't know how old the patient is. We don't know anything about the patient's other medical conditions and problems, which is an issue we get whenever people call and leave a message. Mm-hmm. You know, here's our question. Just answer it. Sometimes we need to ask them some questions.
That's right. Don't be shy. In fact, Kim, if you're listening, please call back. Don't be shy about being on the radio. We do it every week. And we could probably help you more if we had more answers.
That's right. But you know, the general thing is talk to the anesthesiologist. Let them know about your concerns. And let them know about any other health problems you have before you get to the operating room. The anesthesiologist does not want surprises, I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to wake up just as smart as when you went to sleep.
Yeah.
But you have to let them know about your concerns, and you have to let them know what issues are going on that might impact, you know, how well you tolerate the anesthesia. The older you are, the more fragile your brain is. That's just the real world. You know, those of us in our 70s and 80s and 90s do not have the resilience that we had in our teens and 20s to brain injuries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's face it, we kind of joke about the anesthesiologist of being the court poisoner.
Mm.
His job is to poison you unconscious
mm.
and then bring you back by giving you the antidotes.
Right.
And they don't want to take you too deep. They don't want you to have any more than you need. But the process of rendering you insensate so that the surgeon can do his job is an inherently high-risk procedure.
Yeah.
And so these men and women, you know, need to be very highly skilled at their job, and they need to know exactly who they're working on and what the risks are so that they can tailor it to you as an individual.
Yeah.
So I always have a long conversation with an anesthesiologist before they put me under, I promise you.
All right. So. Hope that answers your question, Kim. And if you'd like to talk with us, we would gladly take your phone call. You might have some more information that would help the doctors decide. But talk to your anesthesiologist. That's what the doctors are saying right now.
Yeah, he's saying usually light general anesthesia is very safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
That's my husband, by the way. He just texted me.
And
I guess
he's
listening.
Yeah. All right. He does this quite often.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is his bread and butter.
That's
if
right.
If you will. And Land Rover and home. And
there you go. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. The phone lines are open for your questions at 1-800-465-8770. Don't wait till the end of the show, because we might not be able to get to you or give you all the attention that you need. That's 1-800-465-8770. We will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. Medicine, taking your phone calls this morning. We're live in the studio at 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. And doctors, we wanted to focus a little bit today because October is breast cancer awareness. Perhaps we can talk about prevention or some preventative things we as women mm-hmm. and men can do to prevent breast cancer.
Yeah. Well, breast cancer is not as big an issue for most men. And that's simply because we don't have nearly as much breast tissue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more tissue you got, the higher the risk that you will get a cancer. And in fact, there was kind of some spooky statistics that they actually went by and looked at breast cancer incidence based on bra cup size, which was kind of fascinating. And if they used the A cup, the small, modest-sized breast, as the baseline, it turned out a woman with a B cup had almost twice the risk of breast cancer as a cup because she had twice as much breast tissue. And the C cup increased it another 35-40%. And the big D cup increased it even more.
Mm.
So to some extent, it's simply a matter of how much tissue is there because every cell is reacting independently of the other cells, and you've got a lot more tissue to work with, you've got a higher chance of breast cancer. It's just like big prostates have a higher risk of prostate cancer because they're bigger.
Mm.
You know? So that's one of those things you can't do a whole lot about.
Yeah.
You know, except recognize that if you are a woman with very large pendulous breasts, just by the nature of your physiology, you are at higher risk than that woman with a very small breast.
Sure.
The other thing that you have to look at, and this is one you can modify, is body fat. The fatter you are, the higher your risk of almost every cancer known to humanity.
Mm.
Okay. If you are significantly overweight, your risk of breast cancer and liver cancer and colon cancer and, you know, just run down the cancer list.
Yeah.
All of the cancers are more common in people that are overweight.
Right.
Men and women.
Yeah.
And not only are they more common to get cancers, they more commonly die from their cancers because the fat is not a cosmetic thing. Fat is a very active hormone peptide enzyme producing gland that is producing pro-inflammatory peptides that are getting dumped into your whole bloodstream and increasing inflammation everywhere in your body. So being overweight puts you at higher risk of dementia, strokes, heart attacks, degenerative arthritis. Your joints actually break down faster, and all of your cancer risks are going up with your weight.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a careful one to look at. Other one, sedentary.
Lifestyle, yeah.
Lifestyle, physical activity. Just as fat is a productive, destructive gland, working muscle is a beneficial gland. Working muscle produces more than 600 different proteins that help to kill cancers, help to prevent cancers, help to prevent heart disease, help you to heal and repair from any and every injury you get, decreases your risk of degenerative joint disease, decreases your risk of Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
So to be as lean and as fit and muscular as you can possibly manage is probably the healthiest thing we can do for America.
Mm.
I love the studies you pointed out to during the last break that the GLP-1 inhibitors are now actually lowering the obesity risk in America.
That's right. The rate has gone down for the first time. Yeah.
It's been climbing for decades.
Yep.
And now it's finally starting to bend that curve because of this one medication.
That's right.
Which is really wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see it.
Yeah. And we've known also that the drug has positive impact on heart disease.
Of course.
It is reducing risk for cardiovascular risk and mortality and also inflammation.
Yeah. And how much of that is due to the lower insulin levels and how much is due to the lower body fat?
Correct.
Is a question.
All right. So metabolic risk is decreasing, and then they're studying whether it might be an effective drug to help people who have addiction-related issues, so alcohol addiction particularly. So they're looking into those.
Well, and addictive personality, whether it's a food addiction or alcohol addiction or a drug addiction, you know, addictions are addictions are addictions.
Right.
So,
All right. Okay, thank you, doctor. Is you ready for another phone call?
Why not?
All right. We are headed back to Tacoma. We have John on the line. Good morning, John. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, John.
Good morning. I've had an interesting situation lately. As a patient at Longevity, I had a lot of problem with injuries, you know, little cuts and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And so there was some some estrogen kind of things that you guys gave me. It worked great and stopped it. But I ran out probably about 6 months ago.
Oops.
And recently I've had some situations where I would normally have used it. And so I went to my doctors and I said that I'd like to get a prescription for estrogen. And they all went crazy through the roof. And then yes. I just found out that it was actually estriol that I was using.
Which is an estrogen, but it's one we more commonly use with men. Yes.
Yes. So I wanted to, you know, let the doctors sort of say their thing, but I haven't had the discussion with estriol yet, and right. It's certainly worked, but I just wanted to kind of get your opinion, seeing as how you guys had prescribed it for many years.
Well, the question is, are you no longer a patient at Longevity?
I am.
If you're a patient at Longevity, we can give it to you. We do it
right, but
all
when
the
I
time.
Asked the Longevity, when I asked the Longevity doctor, I asked him specifically for estrogen, not estriol, and he said no way.
All right. Okay. Well, first of all, you need to let him know what you're using it for, which is for wound healing. And so, you know, he may have thought he wanted to be higher. I'm sorry, what?
I was just saying he can reach out to you or me if they have any questions.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the question is, which doctor are we talking about? And we need to find out.
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple of new providers, and they may not be familiar with it, but,
right.
you know, Dr. Mixon has talked about this ad nauseum. And so the older providers all know it and know it well. So it's just a matter of looking in your chart and finding out a little bit more detail. And so if they're not familiar, then just have them reach out to either me or to Dr. Mixon directly.
Yeah. You know, the fact is that testosterone is a anti-inflammatory, pro-healing drug for deep tissues.
Yeah.
For muscle, ligament, tendon, joint sorts of injuries, testosterone is wonderful. But it actually makes bigger, uglier scars on men. Now, most men don't care. They get their macho scars.
Macho.
Look at me. Man. But if they don't want scars.
Me and Rambo.
That's right. Me and Rambo, we're manly men. Yeah. But you can use the estrogen for surgical incisions and so on. And in men, it makes the scars much smaller, smoother, much less visible. And so I have often used it through the decades with men that were undergoing major surgeries who wanted to minimize their scarring. Interestingly, women also, of course, young women don't make as big, ugly as scars as postmenopausal women, because postmenopausal women have less estrogen. And so if a woman is in her 50s or 60s, you know, and they have to undergo a surgical procedure, I strongly recommend that their physicians give them a little estrogen cream for the incision. As soon as the wound is closed, that is 5 days or so, you can start applying a little bit of estrogen cream right to the wound a couple of times a day. You're not getting enough to be absorbed systemically, but it certainly makes that incision and that cut heal far prettier. So tell you what, why don't you go online, go to our website, lmclinic.com, click on Contact Us, and send a note to Dr. Umat or I, and just, you know, tell us which doctor you were talking to, and we'll make sure that they understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So,
yeah, well, I came pretty close to that. So, my toes, sort of the nails ingrew, and so they had to use the surgery to cut them out.
Mm.
And okay. So it's been exceedingly painful to for that to heal. And so I was, you know, thinking that, you know, my estrogen solution might work good. And I mentioned it to the surgeon, and he went through the roof crazy. Don't you dare. And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Surgeons don't understand.
It was it was estrogen I was asking for, not estriol.
Yeah. Well, estriol is a form of estrogen. It's a weaker estrogen than estradiol, which is what we usually think of. And it's actually an anti-breast cancer estrogen. It's an estrogen that women make a lot of during pregnancy when they have these really high hormone peaks, and it protects their breasts during these surges. So, but yeah, I like it for incisions too. So, all right. Thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you for that call, John.
Yeah, good luck. Hope your wound heals well.
Yes, absolutely. Taking a quick break at the top of the hour here and waiting for your phone call. Phone lines are open. Mary, we're going to get to your question next, and then Joe. Our phone number is 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to talk about why you should be a patient at Longevity 2. We'll be right back.